Real estate prices continue to skyrocket in many parts of the country. And even where prices have held steady, many first-time homebuyers are relying on financial gifts or loans from members of their family to secure their down payment. But how much should parents be willing to give their kids? Joining us now is Alan Desnoyers. He is Senior Vice President of BMO Private Wealth. Hello there.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So anecdotally, we know this is happening. How common is it? Do you have a sense for how common this actually is?
No, it's a great question. I would say, first of all, it is something that we're seeing more and more taking place. And I would say, in particular in Canada, if you think of cities like Toronto and Vancouver, it's something that you're definitely seeing.
Yeah, there's just no way a person could afford a place if they didn't have a parental backstop.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Is one, do you have the resources? When you think of affordability in cities like this, it's a key thing. When you think of across kind of developed countries, Canadian home ownership is actually high. It's very high. So we have this belief that everybody should own a home. We're actually not disadvantaged. But when you get to cities like Toronto and Vancouver, the affordability aspect becomes key.
So how would you work with clients to think this through for themselves? Because it's a multifaceted question. It isn't just, do you have the 50 grand or 100 grand to contribute to that down payment? There are emotional elements. There's questions of family values. What's the thought process look like?
And that's, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The key is not just to think about what's the dollar amount, but actually a couple of things have to be looked at. First of all, you know, you've created whatever the wealth is of your family. How have you built that up? Helping the children understand what got you to where you are in terms of building this wealth and perhaps having the capacity to help them. Then turning around and realizing what are the various steps that we need to look at in balancing the interest of the child or the young adult buying their first home or buying their home with the interest of the parent in terms of making sure that they're not, shall I say, mortgaging their future.
Yeah. My retirement savings.
Exactly.
In your condo.
Exactly. So it's looking at that and looking at it with a couple of other factors as well. If you help out a child in buying, if they eventually and are not yet with a partner, you're essentially contributing to that. And how do you want to do that? And to the question, the way you framed it, what are the emotional things that you're trying to solve for? And how do you do that properly? We certainly see, to your original question, a huge increase and a regular increase, I would say, in parents wanting to do this. One, because of affordability, and two, perhaps a realization that it's not about what you're going to inherit after I'm gone, but more, how can I help when you really need the help?
I bought you a house. Be nice to me. You got to come for Sunday dinner because I bought you a house. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
You're a more evolved man than I am.
No. You're right. And we want to do everything for our children. But that also brings you to the other piece of how is it, what's the right thing? It's not just about helping them buy something without really understanding their financial situation and not encouraging to take on something that they really can't afford. This has to be sitting down at their individual plan. And if they are with a partner, what is that going to look like? What's reasonable? The last thing you'd want to do if your intention is really to help is to set them up so that they're going to fail because they bought something they can't really afford.
Such an enormous question too around temperament, because I can see for young people who have demonstrated no interest in personal finance or managing their money to suddenly have a mortgage, that could be an enormous pro because it's forced savings, and it can be an enormous con because they feel trapped or they feel unable to manage the maintenance and the taxes and the upgrades and all that stuff. What questions should parents ask themselves about who their kid is and whether or not this really is a fit for them?
Well, if you actually step even further back, financial literacy would be the jargon that you would use there. How do we begin to talk to children about money and at a very young age? And you've got a whole variety of tools to help you with that. But how do you begin to discuss what is a budget and how can you save money? But how do you equally need to save for a future? Not just I'm saving money for what I'd like to do next week. So the whole conversation around financial literacy and teaching people what is credit, what is savings, what is investing, what is good credit, what is avoiding getting yourself caught in really a treadmill of, oh my goodness, I've got bills that I'm always behind on. Or the last thing we really want to do is to see people that are stretched. So back to your point, financial literacy is something that we're now seeing governments and the like starting to say that we need to do.
I am one of six kids. If there was an investment like this with one one of my siblings and not with me, there would be a lion's roar that you'd be able to hear on Mars. How do parents of more than one child navigate this without feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to spend $1 million with all my children?
Well, and you've answered exactly the question that also has to be looked at is, what's fairness? And if I have a couple of kids, what's the right thing to do? Yeah. And how might I structure that? If I'm going to start with the first child, from a perspective of helping them, you use the figure with a $50,000 down payment.
Yeah.
How about, what am I going to do for the other kids, and what's affordable and what's fair for them? And if I do something with the first one today, how do I immediately protect in the event that I'm not around, something should happen and I'm not around to equalize later? So there's different ways through how you do your estate planning and the like to make sure, through promissory notes, through how you actually structure your will so that that's recognized when you're actually not at the table anymore.
It would seem to be important to paper some of these conversations that you'd think you wouldn't need to, but you might need to. In that, I have one anecdote just top of mind where the purchase occurred, but the kid decided not to stay in the house. They were in a relationship. They moved to a different house. And all of a sudden, the parent is like, wait a sec. How did I suddenly own a condo? I wasn't planning on owning a condo. And then they had to sell the condo. And there was all this drama because there weren't clear expectations about how this was going to unroll.
Right. And that does come back to the core of planning. What is your plan? What is, you know, what is the financial responsibility that you see in your child? Is it, shall I use the word aloof, is it really somebody who's serious about what they want to do and demonstrated not just in the last month, but that they're saving for their contribution, that they are responsible with how they spend money, save money, and the like. And that behavior then at its core is what you really want to see if you as a parent are going to commit. And using that example a step further, if some parents decide they want to co-sign on a loan or a mortgage, well, if the child is no longer there to do it, you're still on the hook for it.
What should the kids consider? Because in some families, like, no big deal, of course, this would be great. In other families, this is a power play. And there would be a lot of dysfunction that could be magnified by this kind of arrangement.
Well, it is, absolutely. Because what you're bringing in is the element of emotion. And it's now it's we're talking about, you know, there can be sibling rivalry. There can be, all of a sudden, you have to ask the question, if this falls apart, what's going to take place? To use your comment earlier, if you still want to have Sunday dinner together, there has to be some kind of, you know, amicable discussion, shall I call it, of really making sure that we understand what are we going to do. And then to your point, absolutely, how does that get papered so that there's a clarity between parents or parent and child? And then if there are more children, so that there's a plan that really is reflective for everybody.
You raised the partner question. So maybe you help with the down payment when the kid is single, they get married. That asset then becomes shared within the context of the marriage, correct?
Yeah, depending on the nature of the contracts and the like, sometimes it necessitates people, if it's a more substantial down payment, to actually sit down and say, you know, are we going to talk about a prenup? Is there something, or is there another way? Is it a loan that I'm going to do rather than just gifting the money? Is it a loan that I'm going to secure? There's different ways that come back to the root of, you need to be planning. You need to be having discussions early around understanding the financial capacity of the child, understanding the financial capacity of the parents and the plans, and then saying, okay, if we think we want to move forward, how do we engage with professionals to find the right structure in which to move forward?
Alan, thank you for the insight.
My pleasure.
Parents, think this through. Please think this through. Alan Denoyer is Senior Vice President of BMO Wealth.